But that's a setup, man. Cause when they wanna take you, they just violate they you. They free. Me and Mufundi is.
No, my dad's not here today. You see, the police, they came and they took him for a ride. You see, he was not fighting that war. You know, the one they call the war against the poor. And he would not bow down to genocide.
Uhuru, welcome to Reparations in Action. This is the show of the African People's Solidarity Committee, and we want to express our appreciation, as always, for having this time on Uhuru Radio, which is the online voice of the International African Revolution. My name is Wendy Snyder, and I am the West Coast representative for the African People's Solidarity Committee and the Uhuru Solidarity Movement. We work under the leadership of the African People's Socialist Party to win allies from the white community for African liberation. Today we're going to hear from Chairwoman Penny Hess, who attended and participated in the tremendous African Liberation Day that took place just yesterday, May 21st, 2011, in Washington, D.C. And it was under the banner of From Africa to the U.S. Liberation Through Resistance, Stop U.S. Wars on Africa. Next, we will hear from Chairman Omalia Shetella addressing the question of the end of time or the end of the world. And some of you may know, some people may have missed it, but yesterday was supposed to be the end of the world, according to some pundits. That didn't happen. African Liberation did, but we're going to be briefly summing that up and hearing from the chairman from a presentation he gave several years back. Next, we will briefly update you on the situation in Oakland where these so-called gang injunctions have been in the news. There's a tremendous political struggle against them in Oakland. And then lastly, we will talk to Rebecca Dillo, who is on the steering committee of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, and she will speak about some of the struggles happening in Columbus, Ohio, where she resides. She will talk about the membership month, the upcoming national convention, and also the Uhuru Summer Project that she and many of us are involved in building for that's being led by the African People's Socialist Party and will take place this summer from July 9th to August 9th. So I just want to welcome Penny Hess, Comrade Chairwoman of the African People's Solidarity Committee, and thank you for being able to be on the show today. Uhuru, Penny.
Uhuru. Uhuru, Wendy. It's great to be on the show and great to hear from you. Welcome to everybody who's listening.
Great. So could you tell us a little bit about African Liberation Day, its significance, and what took place yesterday?
Yes. Well, I had the honor to be able to go to African Liberation Day along with comrade from African People's Solidarity Committee, Harris Daniels. He and I drove down from Philadelphia yesterday to Washington, D.C., to the really profound event, African Liberation Day, that the state or other kinds of forces that want to maintain the status quo of the colonial oppression of African people tried to sabotage by evicting or not allowing the Uhuru movement and the African People's Socialist Party to hold the event at the scheduled place where actually much money had been paid and a contract had been signed. They violated their own contract and would not allow that. So happened, I think, that happened maybe Wednesday prior to the ALD, and in those couple of days, the organizers on the ground in Washington, D.C. had to scramble to try to find another site and to go ahead with the program, and they were successful in doing that. It was held at an African-centered charter school called Roots Charter School in Northwest D.C., really a beautiful, beautiful place, actually. that has a long history of, you know, of teaching African children the African curriculum. So it, they were, you know, the people who were there from the school were really awesome. So the event went on, and the despite the last minute, you know, attempt to undermine the program and to undermine the turnout, people came, and it was very, very successful. It was very powerful. There was there were a lot of great, first of all, incredible cultural workers who participated, including Princess Williams, from the one of the organizers from Impedum in St. Petersburg, who had come up on in a van with others from Impedum there. And she was one of the MCs, but also an incredible performer. And she sang the absolutely awesome song called "Omali, Omali, Omali," which you can see on Uhuru News right now if you go to the lead article about Black Sunday, which was held last week in St. Pete. And it shows, you know, it has a couple of different videos of things that went on during that program. And one of them is that amazing song, "Omali." So, you know, there was that. There was a young drummer and poet named Joseph Xavier, who was just fantastic. Joseph Xavier Mack. There were other young, very dynamic cultural workers. So, you know, it was a very cultural event, but as always, with anything led by the African People's Socialist Party, it also had a very deep message. Chairman Omali Oshetela gave two brilliant, just profoundly dynamic presentations. And he opened up with, you know, how important a time this is, that very critical things are happening in the world. That and you know, and he said that African Liberation Day is a function of the revolution. It's not just a day to sit around and remember African history in an abstract way, but it's a day to galvanize and mobilize African people all around the world to fight for the liberation of Africa and African people everywhere. And, you know, he just talked about how it was the responsibility of Africans to overturn this vicious system of imperialism, that only human beings can end it, and that we have to turn the world right side up, and that we needed to join the human tide of resistance that imperialism is trying to frustrate all around the world. And I just feel like as North Americans, we can take that message even deeper in terms of what our responsibility is for what this vicious system of imperialism is doing to African people on the continent of Africa and wherever Africans are located around the world, and all oppressed peoples around the world, in our name and for our benefit. And that we absolutely have to be able to say and to mobilize the same thing, that imperialism is at a crossroads. It is a desperate imperialism. It is acting in ever more vicious ways, you know, in desperate ways to try to save itself in the face of just growing resistance that they cannot control. And that we have a profound responsibility to be here right inside the belly of this monster and take on our work of undermining and overturning U.S. imperialism from within. So, you know, the chairman just put out a tremendous amount about who Obama is and what he represents and just what he has done so far to escalate the Bush agenda, and how Africans and all people inside this country, all forward-looking people, would have been extremely angry at Bush had Bush carried out all of the things that Obama has done and continues to do every single day, in terms of giving trillions of dollars to the banksters, in terms of you know, escalating the wars and attacking Libya, escalating in Pakistan, attacking, you know, Afghanistan, and bringing troops into Colombia and threatening Venezuela, and, you know, just everything that the U.S. is doing around the world. So, and it was really profound. I mean, nobody, it's not only that nobody in the audience had an objection to what the chairman was struggling around and exposing about Obama, but everybody was, yes, 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 that is absolutely true. So, you know, I mean, there was just so much to say. The chairman talked about what it means, the African nation, what the white nation means, built on the backs of African people, the identity of white people forged through the trade in African people and the assault on Africa, and these questions and how important that the identity of the African nation is to the liberation of Africa and African people, and how the question of racism is fraudulent and is bankrupt. It, you know, you can't win a struggle, you know, based on the question of racism. It has to be on the question of the nation and the right of African people to reclaim and reunify their nation of Africa. Other speakers included profound presentation by Dr. Aisha Fields, the director of APDEP, the All African Peoples Empowerment and Development Project, who just gave a dynamic presentation of why APDEP programs, which brings together Africans, skilled Africans, and Africans who need to use those skills from all around the world, but it is not charity. It is about the self-determination and liberation of African people everywhere. Also, there was an excellent presentation by Sama El Sayed from the party, African People's Socialist Party unit in D.C. on what environmentalism really is about in terms of the white left versus how environmental destruction and pollution really are part of the colonial attack on African people everywhere, and how it has to be taken on in the context of the liberation of African people. Nyabinga Zimbabwe gave an excellent presentation on agitprop and what that means, and how people can join that and be part of it. And Chimamanda Waller gave a great presentation that also put forward the upcoming summer project in St. Petersburg, Florida, that Africans can be part of, and of course North Americans can be part of that as well. It's going to be very historic in St. Pete, Florida, between July 9th and August 9th of this year. So it was a great, great, great program. And it was just very exciting to see that the state and whoever else was behind trying to undermine this event, they were not successful. I think the chairman was saying afterwards that 6 or 7 new members joined. They had a breakdown session, a breakout session with APDEP, and there were tons of people in that joining and making APDEP an ever more powerful organization of African people under the leadership of the party and the Uhuru movement. And, you know, they have a lot of new members, a lot of new contacts. It's on. I mean, yeah. Everything that's, and, you know, and it's very exciting because there have been so many amazing, powerful events in Washington, D.C., you mm-hmm. know, the heart of imperialism just in the last year or so. African Liberation Day, Black is Back, conference, Black is Back demonstration. And, of course, the incredible 5th Congress of the African People's Socialist Party last July.
Right.
So,
wow.
It's very exciting.
Yeah, thank you. That was a great, great summation of the event. And I just encourage our listeners to, I know that the link will be up on Uhuru News soon. And I do see the songs that you referred to, the Omali song, is on that link. I wish we had prepared to play that, but people can check it out under the Black Sunday article. Black Sunday kicks off Countdown to Freedom Summer. But I just think it's, you know, it is on, like you're saying, they can't stop it. And it's just all around us. I think that you summed up so excellently the way that neocolonialism is being exposed to to all peoples. And I think that is really important. And that's something that, you know, even, I mean, you can just see it everywhere. It's not working for them, you know?
Right.
And you know, just everything that Obama does is exposing him more and more. And, like you said, escalating the Bush agenda. And, I just think that it really is our time as North Americans, like you're saying, to really take a deep, deep, you know, and profound responsibility we have to organize other North Americans and join Uhuru Solidarity Movement. So, yeah, I don't know if there's any last words you want to say. We're really excited I'm really excited to be able to come and attend as one of the steering committee members, but to participate in building the Uhuru Solidarity Movement National Convention, Resistance is the Future, that's going to happen in a couple weeks now. And then the summer project. So, you know, we have quite a task ahead of us, but an amazing one to organize people. And are there any last words you'd like to tell our listeners?
Just really quickly, I mean, I think that O'Malley song, which people can see, and also the way it was done again at the ALD, is so, you know, it's really, really powerful and overdue. And at ALD, Princess Williams, who wrote and created that song, said, well, you know, I hear people talking about Malcolm X and Marcus Garvey and this leader and that leader, but where's the song? Where's, you know, the appreciation and understanding of who is O'Malley Ashitella?
Right.
And that is really overdue, a real recognition of the chairman and what it means that he is the one that has struggled to defeat this vicious counterinsurgency that attempted to wipe out the incredibly powerful struggle of the liberation of African people and oppressed people around the world for the last 30 years. And now we see resistance everywhere. And the U.S. can't contain it, even that they keep like wiping out any news about what they call the Arab Spring or the resistance in North Africa and trying to separate that from Africa, where that kind of resistance has been going on for forever.
Mm-hmm.
But these demonstrations and this resistance is stronger than ever. It's going on right now as we speak.
Right.
And even in Spain and in Greece, where they're practically at civil war, we're not hearing about that because the U.S. is trying to wipe that out. But this is what characterized this period of time, is incredible resistance to the viciousness of a system built on slavery and genocide. And I just want to say, everybody that's listening to this show needs to come. I don't care if you hitchhike, if you drive, you know, you can get a flight, a red eye, anything, a Greyhound bus, get here to Philadelphia on June 4th and 5th to this convention for the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, because this is about really taking the leadership of African and colonized peoples around the world. This is about not defeating or changing a symptom of imperialism, but about overturning it, imperialism.
That's
and training
right.
the people on the planet Earth to be able to be part of building a new world, which we have to do because we can't leave this for our children either. We have to take a responsibility to make this world a place where human beings and the earth itself can survive and prosper. So come
Uhuru.
To that 2 weeks from this weekend.
Great. Thank you so much, Penny. And we're looking forward to the convention. Uhuru.
All right, Uhuru.
All right, so that was Chairwoman Penny Hess, who is the chairwoman of the African People Solidarity Committee under the leadership of the African People Socialist Party, building allies from the white community for African liberation, for reparations to the African community. And like she said, joining the tide, the human tide of resistance throughout the globe. So next we're going to hear a presentation that actually Chairman O'Malley Ashitella gave on October 1st, 2006, and it's a presentation entitled The End of Time. I thought it would be appropriate, since yesterday was predicted by some of these forces to be the end of the world, so-called Judgment Day, and Chairman O'Malley is going to address this fallacious philosophy that the end of the world is coming. And I think it's important because people who believe or put out that the end of the world is here can they take no responsibility for the current system, and they attempt to maintain the status quo and keep the status quo in place, which is based on the oppression of African and indigenous people. And it's actually the opposite of the philosophy of African internationalism that says we can and we must take responsibility. You know, in North Americans, this is so important because there are so many ways that we can use to not take responsibility, but African internationalism says that we must and we can and we must take responsibility for our history and the current system and actively oppose it. So I think it's just this interesting that African Liberation Day was on the same day as supposedly the end of the world, and we're still here. African Liberation Day was a success, and the African Liberation Movement is growing full force. So here is a clip from the presentation from Omalia Shetela called The End of Time.
Many of you may know that this concept of Armageddon comes from Revelation in the Christian Bible. Armageddon in Revelation itself is something from the Greek word that sounds something like apocalypse. You've heard of apocalypse, and this means to be revealed. This is God's word being revealed, and the apocalypse is also often associated with the end of time, because it talks about what happens when Jesus returns, and this was something written about 1900 years ago. So about 1900 years ago, you have this concept being put forth about Armageddon. And this has been something that has resonated throughout European history. In fact, people saw the conclusion, they saw during the time of the First Imperialist War that it would be concluded through what they characterize as Armageddon, the end of time. It didn't happen then, but certainly they thought that's what would be the conclusion of the Korean War. It didn't happen then, and certainly, or the Second Imperialist War, they thought this would be the Armageddon, the end of time. And this end of time has been defined in the Bible as a time when all kinds of chaos reigns supreme in the world. And the fact is that even the Jews themselves, the Hebrews, when they wrote about this end of time scenario, this concept of Armageddon, were speaking of time when there were crises and difficulties that the Hebrews would face, which is not that really that much important to us. But what is important is that really today people are preaching about these being the end of time. And it is not absolutely true, untrue, depending on how you view the world. Because the world that we live in today is a world that has been constructed by white power of the misery and at the expense of Africans and other peoples around the world. When they talk about the end of time coming because they see crisis and chaos, what appears as chaos to them is actually people struggling and challenging the relationship that they have to white power and to imperialism. So it is a tremendous threat. Here you have a place, they didn't think of it as the end of time. When they came to the Americas and kicked off a process of killing the indigenous population here, maybe 98% of all the so-called Indians were wiped out. But the white people did not see it as the end of time. Europeans did not perceive this occurrence as something representing the end of time. In fact, for them, It was a new beginning, wasn't
yes.
it? It was like the beginning of their leap into history. The same thing is true in general in terms of how Europe moved in the world. When they initiated this process of slavery that disrupted the history and the future of Africa, the white people didn't see this as the end of time. When Leopold killed 12 to 15 or more million African people just in the process of forcing Africans to work in the rubber plantations, when they killed all these Africans in what we now know as the Congo, they didn't see that as the end of time. When Europeans went into a little tiny island that initially they called something like Hispaniola, that we now know as Haiti, where there were 9 million human beings living there, so-called Indians. And after a four-year period, they had killed, they had left only 2 million left. The white people didn't see that as the end of time. But the fact is that there are no more so-called Indians left in this place called Haiti. There are no more Indians left in what they call Jamaica. Did you know that Jamaica and all these areas were initially inhabited by some people who they call Indians? But they're all wiped out. And the white people did not see this as the end of time. They were even able to write a novel that's called The Last of the Mohicans.
Yeah.
Where did the other ones go? But they did not characterize this as the end of time. They didn't see this as the end of time.
Right.
But today, they're all talking about the end of time. About Armageddon. Being upon us. And the problem is that some Africans are also caught up in this discussion talking about this representing the end of time. What is it that is causing them to have this discussion about the end of time? Perhaps it is the fact that here are white people who stole all this land that we now recognize as the United States of America, who built economies based on the enslavement of African people. We don't know how many were killed in the process of making this happen. I tell you this, though, we fought every inch of the way. Listen, more than you might even imagine, we fought. We fought. We fought great battles. We fought subtle battles. We poisoned them. The women ground up glass and put in their food.
Yes.
They stuck hat pins in the brains of their back of the skulls of little white babies so they wouldn't grow up to be slave masters themselves. There was never a time when we did not resist. We always fought.
Yes.
But white folk came here, and they took all this land. And so they talking about the end of time, because although damn near every so-called Indian who lived here before is gone, almost, with the few still hung in these concentration camps. And others turned into alcoholics, wandering up places in the West and Southwest, beaten down, humiliated, etc. They did all of that, and then they created this huge, powerful, rotten to the core institution that we now know as the United States of America. But they're talking about the end of time, because finally. They look up and they see their security is not what they thought it was.
Yes.
Here they are on somebody's land, built off of genocide and slavery. Riches that were stolen not only from Africans and the indigenous population here, but from poor people all around the world. And their buildings come crumbling down. It must be the end of time. September 11th must be something like the end of time to white people who've lived so comfortably, so secure, watching everybody else on the earth die to enrich them. Die to enrich them, and they could never talk about the end of time. It's not the end of time because all of these Africans in Congo died. It's not the end of time. It's not the end of time because 98% of the so-called Indians died throughout America. That's not the end of time. But bring down the buildings here. You have a beginning of a discussion about the end of time. Apocalypse now. Armageddon must be before us. Isn't that something? Because before the future was clear.
There was no horizon to the ambition of white power. It didn't even have an horizon. You couldn't even see the limits of it. But today they can see the limitations of it. Everywhere they go, that's all they see are limitations. Must be the end of time that we are looking at. Look at what's happening in the Middle East. Who's more powerful than the America? Who's the second most powerful force, but a superpower in the Middle East? And as at America's bidden, this nasty, reactionary, hunky empire in the Middle East called Israel attacks not a country, because the country had already been immobilized by them, but attacked the only organization in the country that stood up and gave some backbone to the people in the country and to the Middle East, and they attacked them, and they attacked, and they attacked, and they attacked, and guess what? The people fought back and beat them, and beat them, and beat them. Must be the end of time. Wasn't the end of time when they went into Lebanon before. Wasn't the end of time when all the rockets were raining down on Beirut, destroying the entire city of Beirut. Wasn't the end of time. They began to see the end of time when they began to see the resistance of the people beat them back, and that superpower stuff didn't mean anything to them. Must be the end of time. Must be the end of time. Venezuela. You're not looking at, when you look at America and Western imperialism, what you are looking at is an entity, the European nation that defined itself through Christianity. Yes. It is good. George Bush stood up and said, they hate us because we are good and they are evil. They are good. Everything, they represent everything good. Yes. Even in the middle of killing everybody, you know, sometimes people like to pretend to us that when we see what America's doing in places like Iraq, they say, oh, that's just a bad thing, but that's just American idealism going astray, they tell us. But what I want to tell you is that there has never been a lost innocence here. There has never been a time that America didn't know what it was doing, that white people didn't know what America was doing. Didn't they know that the Indians were being killed? Who was killing them? White people were killing them. Was no Rockefeller, was no ruling class, ordinary white people went out and killed them and murdered them and took their land and built their houses on it. Wasn't the end of time when that was happening. Was no end of time then. And so you have a situation, all the white people knew that was going on. They knew that that they were not a native to this land. They knew that they came over, they teach it in the schools even today, that they got on some ships. They named three ships that Columbus came on. Wasn't it Columbus who came in the Nina, the Pina, and the Santa Maria? And then they tell you about other kinds of ships that the pilgrims came on. Oh, they know that they are not indigenous to this land. Yes. And so they knew then there was no lost innocence. Yes. Did the white people not know that slavery happened? Did the white people not know that slavery happened? Of course they knew slavery happened. And it didn't just happen down south, it happened up north. And the ones up north got rich from the ones down south, and vice versa. There's no lost innocence here. They all knew that it was going on. But here's the problem that you have. Did they know about Jim Crow? Did they know about lynching? Hell yes, they knew about lynching. Lynchings were mass affairs. These were major events that white people went and took. They took their children, took the old folks, and everybody watched. Let's go out and watch the Negro be killed.
Yeah.
And if we're lucky, we get a souvenir. We get a finger, a toe. We get a sexual organ and what have you. Literally thousands of white people came out and watched this. No lost innocence here. Wasn't the end of time when they were doing that. Wasn't the end of time when they had convict leasing in this country, where African convicts built the economy of the South that had been defeated in the Civil War. Was no end of time then. But the end of time seems to be upon them. And why was there no end in the time? Because they were Christians. And because their Christianity is what sent them out in the first place to kill the Indians. They went out to civilize the people, the so-called Indians here.
Yes.
The Pope gave them permission to engage in slavery. It was their Christianity that did them, that held them together. Their goodness. It was their goodness that killed the Indians. Oh, yeah. It was their goodness that got them involved in slavery. It was their goodness that got them involved in lynching African people in this country. So they are good. And here you have Christianity teaching them that at some the same Christianity that they had Jesus on the cross. Also was the Christianity that was responsible for the flaming cross that they used at lynchings of African people. Yes. It was their goodness.
Yes.
And now the same Christianity that made them good and in their goodness killed Indians and took lands and enslaved human beings. You know, sometimes in the military, you had a situation where the chaplain, the military chaplain, would bless the bombs before they went off to drop them on people. Did you know that? It's their goodness that did that. It was their goodness. And this is, so you have this situation, the same Bible that sent them out to do these things, that saw them acquire wealth and saw them acquire freedom. And as a consequence of doing these things, is the same Bible that taught them about Armageddon, about the end of time, about the plagues, about the seven trumpets that would blow at the end of time, about the chaos that would reign at the end of time. Was no chaos when they were killing Africans in the Congo. Was no chaos when they were lynching Africans here. Was no chaos when they were disrupting civilization in Africa. Now they can see chaos because they are being affected and they cannot see their own future clearly. Must be the end of time. Must be the end of time. And so this is what you have, what you're looking at. And like I said, unfortunately, some Negroes think they're looking at the end of time. When they see this and they can point to it, they talk about wars unending. Must be the end of time, because the Bible said that at the end of time you would have wars like this.
Yes.
And so you got Africans who have no sense of ourselves, no sense of our own identity, who assume, who accept for themselves the definition of reality and time that's been imposed on them by slavery and colonialism.
Yes.
The white man sees the end of time and they see the end of time as well.
Yes.
Because their time is the white man's time.
Yes.
Because their future is the white man's future. And if the white man has no more time and the white man has no more future, then they have no time and no future. Must be the end of time.
Come on. Yes. Yes.
And the end of time that they're looking at is that what they are really seeing is the end of the white man's time.
Yes.
That what they're looking at is the end of the time of imperialism, the end of the time of colonialism. That's what the end of time. And as it's an end of time for white power, it is a new beginning for black power. That's what they're looking at. And that's what we are working to build today. That's what our participation in this whole world is to bring about a renaissance, to bring about a resurrection, the redemption of Africa, to talk about a new beginning. This new beginning spells doom for imperialism, spells doom for white power.
Yes.
Must be the end of time.
Yes. Yes.
We're working to make it the end of time.
Yes.
And that's what it is that we're about. So we're not concerned about this end of time. They don't scare us with this notion of this being the end of time. I remember in 1967, must have been, I had a, this is black power thing was scaring white people to death. They were accustomed to our timid parents at the time, who wouldn't defy them. And we talk to them in their faces and talk about black power and talk about the days of nonviolence agone, white man. And I remember being on this television program, me and Mukasa Willie Ricks, right here in this city. And the white man was so nervous. I mean, we were talking to him and talking to him, and he was sweating, and his pancake makeup was sliding down the sides of his face and what have you. And we were smoking him so bad, and the thing was over. And as the television program was ending, he said, it looks like we're out of time. And the last word that everybody who was looking at that show heard was me saying, that's right, white man, you're out of time.
Uhuru. So you just were hearing a portion of the presentation that Chairman Omalia Shetela, Chairman of the African People's Socialist Party, gave called The End of Time. This was given on October 1st, 2006. We thought it would be appropriate to play today, the day after the last day of the world. And there were forces throughout, particularly one preacher, I guess you could call him, in Oakland, California, who was putting out that May 21st, 2011 was the end. And the whole question of the apocalypse, Armageddon, I think that the chairman addressed really powerfully the question of the end of time, you know, for really should mean is the end of a system based on oppression of the world's peoples. And, you know, we think that this whole philosophy that the end is coming is just another way to not take responsibility. It is our purpose in the African People's Solidarity Committee and the Uhuru Solidarity Movement to take responsibility, to address the conditions that African and indigenous people face in this current system for our benefit. So we encourage everyone who now is convinced that the world is not going to end, but that the system must end, the system of imperialism, to join Uhuru Solidarity Movement. Go to uhurusolidarity.org. You're listening to Reparations in Action on Uhuru Radio, the online voice of the African Revolution. And the next update we wanted to do was just on the whole question of the gang injunctions in Oakland. The gang injunctions here in Oakland, California, are just part of the war on the African and Mexican communities. And they were introduced by the city attorney, who imposed one injunction on the African community last year and a second one just earlier, later in 2010, which named 15 Africans on one and 40 Latino, mostly Mexican men on the other. It restricts their movement, their freedom of speech, freedom of expression, freedom of association, these supposedly constitutionally guaranteed rights, and essentially justifies further police containment of East and, in the case of the North Side injunction, the African community of North Oakland, Bushrod Park. So City Council of Oakland just last Tuesday night, May 17th, voted, it was a 4-2 vote, it was pretty close, that the two injunctions will remain. The city government faces tremendous resistance from the African and Mexican and other communities to these gang injunctions, and we can just see that this resistance is growing. So we're going to hear a brief news clip about the city council vote that took place last Tuesday night, May 17th.
It is 8:02. The debate to pay for two controversial gang injunctions in Oakland lasted into the early morning hours. Our crews were there as a passionate city council meeting finally led to a decision. And KTV's Claudine Wong joins us now live with reaction to that decision. Good morning, Claudine.
Good morning, Tori. Yes, the gang injunctions will remain in place. That was the decision by the city council in a vote that took place very early this morning. They decided to keep them in place, and they decided to have an independent evaluation to see if they're effective or not, because that debate still continues. By the time this vote happened early this morning, tensions were pretty high.
Hey, you know what? If you keep saying something, as much as I respect you, I will have OPD to remove you. Be respectful of us. Be respectful of us as we've been respectful for everybody that have speak.
Always the first tool.
You know what? All right. Why don't we just vote the item?
The vote was a close one, 4 yes, 3 no, but the decision to keep the gang injunctions in place did pass early this morning. Those injunctions are in North Oakland and the Fruitvale District. The injunctions establish curfews and safe zones and set up rules for identified gang members. At least one person we talked to who is on the list of identified gang members says that list and that injunction is preventing him from moving forward in his life. We talked to folks out here in Oakland who say they just aren't sure if gang injunctions are the answer.
Gang members, I'm sorry, they're human. We just have to learn how to deal with their problems.
So you don't want to prohibit them from going places?
No. I just think that they have problems and everything. I think that we should take time enough to sit down with them and find out what the solution is.
The police chief, Anthony Batts, told us after the vote that he thinks gang injunctions work, but he also believes that an independent look by an unbiased party will help address concerns. Some of those deal with racial profiling. Live here in Oakland, Claudine Wong, KTVU, Channel 2 News.
All right.
Uhuru, so we were just hearing a news clip about the gang injunctions in Oakland. There was a narrow vote in city council in Oakland, California on last Tuesday night, May 17th, that basically upheld the two injunctions that have been put in place as part of the war on the African and Mexican communities. However, it did state that the speakers opposing the injunction went through the night, and it was over 200, almost 300 speakers, mostly opposing the injunctions. And we of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement certainly oppose the gang injunctions. They are glorified restraining orders that essentially legalize so-called racial profiling and will, in fact, escalate the war on the African, already do escalate the war on the African and Mexican communities, and are escalating the resistance. So I must say that I was just really proud to be a part of the citywide coalition, because the young people in particular are defiant, and they are not afraid of the power at City Hall. They're not afraid to speak out of turn, and are just really, really on, you know, in your face and ready to struggle. This, I also wanted to mention something that we should all be watching for in Oakland. Johannes Meserle, who murdered Oscar Grant, young African, on the BART, the transit platform on January 1st, 2009, is due to get out of jail for serving just several months for involuntary manslaughter in that murder. This is a white BART policeman, which stands for Bay Area Rapid Transit. He is a former BART police officer who killed Oscar Grant. So the people in Oakland who are concerned about this are definitely, you know, watching the story around the world. I think people are watching. So we'll be updating you on that as well. So we're hoping to get in touch with Rebecca Dillo, and she is on the steering committee of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement. She's based in Columbus, Ohio. And let's see, have we been able to reach her on the air? Okay, we'll keep trying to get in touch with her. We're building across the country for Uhuru Solidarity Movement Convention, and I just want to put a plug in. Penny Hess, earlier on the show, spoke about why you should go. I want to put a plug. This is Resistance is the Future, Solidarity with African Liberation, and it's happening on June 4th and 5th in Philadelphia. At the First Unitarian Church at 2525 Chestnut Street. The second day will take place at our Uhuru Solidarity Center, 3733 Lancaster Avenue. The first day will be workshops and speakers talking about Obama's war, talking about how the African community bears the brunt of the economic crisis, talking about the prisons, police, and gentrification, which is really also what the gang injunction is about here in Oakland, and the role of white solidarity, the role of white people in solidarity with African resistance and revolution. So some of the people we have on the panel, we have our keynote speaker is Chairman Omala Yeshitela, the founder and leader of the Uhuru Movement and chairman of the African Socialist International. Glenn Ford, if you haven't heard Glenn Ford speak, he can't be missed. Executive editor of the Black Agenda Report, Black is Back Coalition for Social Justice, Peace, and Reparations is who he is. Diop Olugbala is the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement president, who is currently based in Philadelphia, where he's led fearless struggles against the police violence, the whole billion-dollar war in the African community there. PAM Africa, many people may know, is with MOVE International Concerned. Friends and family of Mumia Abu-Jamal will be speaking. Nellie Bailey, the director of the Harlem Tenants Council, who is also a member of the Black is Back Coalition. And Penny Hess, who we heard from earlier on the program, will be speaking. She is the chair of the African People Solidarity Committee and the author of Overturning the Culture of Violence. All right, Rebecca, are you on the air?
No, we're not able to get Rebecca.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll try again on another show. I did want to just encourage people to go to uhurusolidarity.org to register for the convention. Support someone else going if you can't go yourself. I'm going from the West Coast. It's not too late to get tickets. You can register now and spread the word on Facebook, on Twitter about this convention, because it's really an historic convention. We'll be finalizing our constitution, and the organization of allies from the white community under the leadership of the African Liberation Movement is really consolidating its organization, and you should be there.
I'm going to be there.
Be a part of it. Sandy is going to be there. Sandra Thompson, I'm glad you said something. She's engineering the program today, and she could not hold her tongue because she's excited about being there.
I am. It's going to be awesome.
It's really going to be great to see you there. So, yes.
And if you want, Wendy, I could say a few, since I'm in St. Petersburg, I could share some about the summer project. I know Rebecca was going to talk about that as well.
Yeah, please do that, because that is really going to be the segue from the convention to the summer project. So please say something.
Well, the African People's Socialist Party is, and the Uhuru Movement is calling on students, it looks like Rebecca is trying to call in. I'm going to try and get her. It may put you on hold for a second, so let's try this here. Uhuru, Rebecca.
Uhuru.
I'm going to try to add you together into one call if I can.
Okay.
No, I can't. I need to call you both in a conference call. So let me hang up on you. I'm going to hang up on both you guys and reinitiate as a conference call.
Okay.
Advisors, computer technicians, healthcare workers, teachers, young people, and workers in general to be a part of the summer project. So I've had to reinitiate as a conference call, Wendy, but I think I have both of you now, Wendy and Rebecca.
Okay, excellent. All right, Uhuru, Rebecca.
Uhuru.
All right, so we have about, 7 minutes left to the program, so we still have some time to talk. And I would hope, if you could briefly sum up the current struggle in Columbus that you were about to address, and then move into talking about why you're going to the Uhuru Solidarity Movement Convention and participating in the summer project.
Okay, Uhuru. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you having me on the show today. And basically the struggle that's going on in Columbus is that there was a young African girl. She's 13 years old. She's actually a schoolmate of my daughter's. And we live in a suburban area right outside of Columbus, Ohio. It's called Gahanna, Ohio. And what we've experienced there is that there's been a lot of issues in the school over the school year. And my daughter, she is a white North American, and I made the decision, because there were so many fights and things that she was doing going on in the school, I made the decision to remove her from the school. So I've been doing some, homeschooling the last several weeks with her. But on April 26th, there was a young African girl who was arrested from the school. She had gotten to a fight, and the principal there had called the police rather than defusing the situation like he did with my daughter when she would start these types of things in the school. As a white student, they just simply called me and told me to come pick her up. But in this situation, on April 26th, this young African girl, her name is Drainique Gibson, she was actually arrested. The police came and got her. They fingerprinted her. They read her Miranda rights.
And she's 14 years old, right?
13 years old.
13 yeah. years old.
13.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, I mean, it was just a whole different set of circumstances for the same kind of situation. And that was very upsetting to me, you know, not only as, you know, of course, as a USM member in the Solidarity Movement, but as a citizen, that was very upsetting to me that how a white student would be treated one way and for similar circumstances, the African student was treated much differently. And that was very upsetting to me. Well, it just so happened the following day after, or 2 days after it happened, I got a phone call from Drainique's mother, Kenya, and she called me and told me what had happened and asked for some help. And as a Solidarity member, you know, I was like, wow, this is wonderful that I could actually help, you know, in a direct way in Solidarity. So I went with her to a hearing. They did an expulsion hearing where the principal was there and also a representative from the school district. So basically I went to that hearing, and my daughter and I both went and, you know, standing in support with them. And the end result was she was able to go back to school. So that was a victory. And I was able to
Uh-huh.
see.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very exciting. But she's still charged with assault. Yeah,
and she's
actually,
still under the colonial school system, we have to say, too.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I appreciate your sharing that because I think that, you know, all around we can see, you know, as we can see this happening all the time, and it is important to stand up. It's important to be a part of an organization, and I think it's, you know, being a part of an organization allowed you to take, you know, that great stand in a powerful way. So we want to talk a little bit about the USM convention. I already put out a lot about the program and stuff. So maybe just briefly say why you're going and why you support the Uhuru Summer Project as well.
Okay. Well, I'm definitely, I'm going, my personal choice to go to the convention is so that, you know, that I can learn more of what I can do as a white North American into supporting African liberation so that it's not just that, you know, I'm doing good deeds or being nice or through charity work, but actually real work that I can work in solidarity with the African liberation movement, you know, in a real way, rather than just donating money or doing things from time to time, but doing it and having this part of my life. So the reason I'm going is to network with comrades like you and to be with you in the same room and to work together and to learn how to organize.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's really what, and to hear the leadership of the African Solidarity or African Socialist Party, to actually hear leadership and get guidance from the leadership of the party rather than just being out here as an individual working and just be part of an organization that's actually trying to make it a better world, you know. And as
right.
we see with everything going on, it's just, you know, this world is just in shambles, but I want to be part of a better world for the future, for my children, for my grandchildren. So that's really why I'm making the decision to drive to Philadelphia, you know, and to go and to really be there and to learn and to grow as an individual and as a member.
How can people get in touch with you if they are in your area? Can you give an email real quick?
Sure. If they're in my area, we have, I'm on Twitter, so they can follow me on Twitter. It's at USM for Uhuru Solidarity Movement Columbus. So that's the best way to follow me on Twitter. And also I'm on Facebook, which is Rebecca Dillow, D-I-L-L-O-W. And an email is my personal email. If you're in any area, you can reach out to me at Becca, B-E-C-C-A, Dillow, D-I-L-L-O-W, at yahoo.com.
Okay, great. So we're running out of time. The Uhuru Summer Project is a really important project that's happening July 9th to August 9th in St. Petersburg, Florida. Please uh-huh. go to our Uhuru Solidarity Movement, uhurusolidarity.org website. There is an ad for that. There's also information on Uhuru News. And we're definitely going to be talking about that more on the program. I did want to put out that if you are in the Philadelphia area, you should go to the organizing meetings Thursday night on May 26th. There will be a meeting at 7 o'clock at the Uhuru Solidarity Movement Center, 3733 Lancaster Avenue. And also, there is work happening in St. Petersburg, Florida. There is a conference happening at USF campus on Thursday night, and that is taking place at 130 Davis Hall. We are out of time.